With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, welcome to Good Job, where we interview some inspiring people from the music industry and look at their journey from their very worst job to present day.
I had a stammer when I was a kid, so when I was about 12 years old, lasted about 2 years. Singing and beatboxing was a big thing for me at that time. Mm-hmm. And so I just remember that being a really positive expression for me. Mm-hmm. And I guess that helped mentally.
Our next guest is Danny Ladwa. He is a beatboxer, a singer, a songwriter, and founder of the School of Beatbox and the Stammering Voice Orchestra. In this episode, we chat about Danny's stammer as a teenager, how gaining vocal confidence through singing helped him through this period in his life, as well as the correlation and differences between singing and beatboxing.
That's the coolest.
Good job.
We always start with the same question. Right. What was your worst job?
It probably has to be selling windows over the phone when I was like 16 or 17 years old. You know, calling people up and just basically annoying them was probably not what I was here to do.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely on a better path now.
Yeah. So when did you start beatboxing?
Beatboxing started when I was about 11 years old. Mm-hmm. I guess like my musical journey wise, I guess from the age of six, my parents really noticed that I was thinking about rhymes a lot more than most kids were. My older brother, 4 years old, you know, got to 11 years old. First time I ever wrote a full verse for a song, which is, you know, a real milestone for me. I was just like, wow, so proud of this. You know, this thing that I created. But it was then that I started really thinking and realizing that I was songwriting, really, because I was imagining the rest of the track in my head and realized quite quickly that the soundtrack that I was listening to in my head was stuff that I'd never heard before. So I was thinking about bass lines, beats, backing vocals, piano lines, guitar lines, all this type of stuff, even strings and stuff like that. I really, really imagine all of this stuff. And I guess the earliest time I can remember, I guess I was just, you know, thinking about these beats so much that it just started to translate. I started doing little beats and stuff. This is going to sound really whack to all you beatbox lovers out there, but this was like my first ever beat when I was 11 years old. It was something just using the lips, and it'll be something like, something like that. And I was just like, okay, just trying to get two different sounds coming out at the same time. And I guess it started like that. And then it was like...
Were you aware of beatboxing at the time, though? Or
no, not
at
all.
That's amazing.
Not at all. You know, actually, my brother used to do like a little kind of beatboxing. I think he saw it in a film or something like that. Anyway, but I'd never really seen beatboxing. Mm-hmm. None of my friends were doing it. So actually, when I started beatboxing, I was just doing it to myself. I was super shy, didn't want to show it to anyone because I didn't realize that there was even a platform for it or what people would make of it, you know. So I just started doing it. Yeah, actually, the real kind of catalyst was just sitting with my brother. We were just waiting for this computer game to load, taking ages, and I just started like beatboxing, you know, just sitting there, whatever. And I was just beatboxing away. My brother's sitting next to me, and I didn't realize that I'd done it. So I was just in my own kind of world, right? And he basically looks around and he's like, what the hell was that? And I was like, nervous at the time, waiting for his reaction. And he basically gave me the thumbs up. I was like, that was wicked, man. Yeah, kind of since then, I got getting the recognition from my bro. I started to share it with friends at school. And, you know, one thing leads to another. As soon as I showed it to my best mate, you're like bringing more people around, and it became a little performance thing. And I guess it just kind of developed. I became a bit of a performer as a, you know, at that age. When I turned 17, I got my first live performance offer, which was at King's Cross. I guess I probably wasn't even allowed in there because I was 17, but anyways.
They let you in anyway.
the gig happened. And that was my first gig, and then I got a couple more opportunities that came from that. A couple of people approached and gave me options, you know, said, would you like to play at this gig or festival? And I said, yeah, got this other diary and started doing more.
To singers, I guess I know the path of singers or where you get jobs, but how does it work in the beatbox world? It's completely different.
It's more people seeing you perform and then they want it. And the great thing about beatboxing is I found myself on bills, could be bands going on, could be even comedians and stuff. And in between, it's one of those things, you know, when people are maybe setting up for the next thing, it's something that can slot in so easy. All I needed was a microphone, super quick sound check, and I can entertain. And a beatbox set could be anywhere from, you know, a couple of minutes to, you know, 10 minutes, where I've done much longer. It's my longest ever time on stage. I think it was 7 hours.
7 hours?
Yeah, that's the longest.
How do you keep coming up with new ideas for 7 hours?
Well, you know, always been an improviser. So this was actually in Goa just a few years ago, actually. I was on tour with a guy called Gaudi. I'd organised a night, actually, and did a Danny Ladwell and Friends night. There were some really amazing musicians there at the time. Mm. And I basically said, look, I want you. Let's all do this. Everyone was up for it. I had like 10 people on stage at one point. I mean, that was actually lots of beatboxing, but lots of singing, emceeing and improvising, basically. Just improvised all the lyrics and all of the tracks. We'd be there like, what are we doing next, guys? You know, like looking around. I'm like, okay, this track is that that one that goes like, and the drummer would be like, he would just start his thing. I'm like, oh yeah, that's the one. And then we'd just like get on it. But yeah, it's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Do you sing as well?
I do, yeah.
Yeah. I always feel like a lot of beatboxers that I've heard are pretty good singers as well. And I guess you train your voice in a certain way. So you're learning to use your voice in a singing way by beatboxing? Or do you disagree, you know, some terrible singer beatboxers?
No. I mean, some beatboxers aren't singers at all.
Okay.
But I think because when you beatbox, you know, you become very in tune with the workings of your vocals.
Mm.
You know, you're very in contact with obviously your technique, breathing techniques, and all the different parts that make up, you know, a beatboxer basically. So, you know, lips, tongue, all of the, you know, using all of the
same
front
anatomy,
as well.
Yeah.
There's lots of beatbox sounds actually.
Mm.
Things like, for example, the vocal scratch, like. This stuff here, you're using like very high pitched stuff, like,
and
you're going all the way down like the scale, like, ow.
Yeah.
You know, you really
have
to bring it right down. So I guess you are kind of singing a lot. Beatboxers will always do bass lines. When you beatbox a bass line, your simple bass kind of sound, you've got throat bass and all that. You do simple bass line, you're literally humming. Because you're thinking melodies and notes, not only just the sounds.
Yeah, it's not just the drum percussive sounds.
No, yeah.
For sure, there's a lot of pitch in there.
Exactly.
So tell us about the School of Beatbox.
I launched it last year, April. I've been teaching a lot in schools, working in various community centres, schools, even in prisons sometimes, and all different types of settings. I just wanted to open up the teaching, really. So the root of it was kind of just wanting to take beatbox teaching online. But I'm really into this kind of one-for-one, you know, where if you sell something, then put a portion of that towards something that's good, that you believe in, you know, a good cause. I had a stammer when I was a kid. So when I was about 12 years old, it lasted about 2 years. And very, very frustrating, very, very embarrassing at the time. You know, I didn't know how to deal with it, but I kept it kind of off the radar pretty much for the most part. You know, it wasn't a big thing. I didn't get therapy or anything like that for it. Singing and beatboxing was a big thing for me at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just remember that being a really positive expression for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that helped mentally for me because I was stuck in some ways, but then I was able to impress people with just using my voice in these other ways. So that was really cool. So I wanted to reach out, actually, because I kind of, you know, because it lasted so 2 years. And when my stammer passed, I guess I kind of tried to forget about it. And I kind of did. Mm. That's over. Let's get on with life. I was so happy that I didn't stammer anymore. So that was brilliant at the time. But then now I was just kind of like, you know, looking back, I guess, and just, you know, what was that all about? And are there any parts of me that potentially could be unresolved or something because of that time? And so I reached out to the British Stammering Association. Actually, they invited me to do a 1 hour talk on beatboxing. And my idea was then to get together a group of people at Stammer and basically do vocal, basically just like a vocal orchestra. We call it a Stammering Voice Orchestra. And we've done 2 performances so far. And that's really just to, you know, I guess, raise the profile of stammering and get more people, kind of shine a light on it, really.
Yeah.
And let people at Stammer know that, you know, they don't have to live in isolation and be themselves, you know.
And what you said, which was really interesting earlier, is when we were chatting before the podcast, was that when you're singing, your stammer isn't there at all.
That's right, yeah. So it's very interesting stuff. I mean, first of all, so stammering, the roots of it and the causes of it are quite a grey area. People aren't really sure. There's various schools of thought. But when you beatbox or sing, you're connecting obviously to the creative side of your brain. So this is where it kind of stems from. This is as far as we know. And what a lot of people that stammer do, they're in their head. It's like a frantic process that's going on because they are swapping words because they know the words come in that they will struggle on, they'll get stuck on. So they're trying to figure out another word, and, you know, they're trying to make it seem on the outside that everything's super cool. They're just flowing, but their mind's going a bit crazy. Because you're connected to the creative side, it somehow doesn't affect. So, you know, Ed Sheeran said something along the lines with his stammer, his words in his head, he was putting into 4-word raps, I think, and it helped him. It's quite interesting. I'm very fascinated by it, the roots of it. I actually think it's to do with more psychological things like, you know, childhood trauma. I think what they found out is that they can't find any real brain function disorder. They can't really see anything that's different. So creatively, singing, beatboxing, all these things, it doesn't affect. And that's why I wanted to, you know, set up the Stammering Voice Orchestra, mainly actually, because it's not with the view that it's going to cure, but at least raise confidence, first of all, for the people that are singing and beatboxing, because a lot of people that stammer wouldn't really think about singing. And the other thing is just to raise the profile of stammering so people can, because a lot of people don't know much about it or how best to support people that do.
What would you say would be the best way to support someone?
First of all, like, one of the things that is very frequent that people do, if you're in a situation where someone you can see is struggling with a stutter or stammer, it feels like the obvious thing to do is to finish the sentence for them, right? Because you just kind of want to jump in because you know what they want to say and you kind of figured it out. And that's probably one of the worst things that you can do in that situation. I found that there's a real self-isolation, whether it's on the phone, in person. So a lot would have isolated kind of jobs, you know, when they're kind of in an office and not really having to do that, just kind of more admin stuff. And that's kind of a real shame. And obviously psychologically, that must have a real, real big effect. So anything that can kind of help raising self-esteem and confidence, helping people that stammer feel proud and not worry about this issue that they have with their speech, because they shouldn't. They shouldn't have to hide it.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than 1 billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You, interestingly, were telling me earlier that you used singing a little bit to help you with your own stammering.
I did, yeah. So I would find myself in situations where if I knew that I was going to get stuck on a particular word, I would sing it subtly, totally off the radar. For example, what does it say on that book there? Silk Road Vegetarian. And I'd be like, say the word vegetarian was like the one that I'd get stuck on, right? I'd just be like, so yeah, I read this the other day. It was wicked. Yeah, I met, you know, Beth, and she like had this wicked book, some wicked recipe. I was like, it was called Silk Road Vegetarian. Vegetarian. You know, that kind of thing, but just subtly thinking like that, I guess, again, it's connecting with the creative side of the brain, and it would always work.
Right.
It was either that or shouting the word, which was really embarrassing.
Oh, really?
I had to, like, you know, sort of vegetarian, yeah. And just like force it out, and that would be a bit weird, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, why don't you just shout the word vegetarian? I mean, whatever
it
was.
I'm going to sing it or shout it, you choose.
Yeah. So it was that, and, you know, the other thing was my own name I got stuck on. Anything that begins with a B, D, T, acute kind of harsher sounding,
yeah,
you know,
consonants.
Yeah, that's where I'd usually get stuck. My name's Danny, so it was like, sometimes I get stuck on that, and the amount of times you get asked your name, that's, you know, how many times you have to use it. So that was a real struggle. So I had to find a way, you know, to find a way to fix it. And then it kind of faded, you know, it's weird. It's like I think the statistics are, it's 1% of the population in the world that stammer, roughly.
That's quite a lot, actually.
It's quite a lot, isn't it? Yeah, every 100, you've got one person there that's so it's really something that the profile of it really needs to be raised. That's what School of Beatbox doing, you know, we're looking at really raising the profile of it. And with the Stammering Voice Orchestra, we've done two performances. Last year we performed at the UK Beatbox Championships in October, which went down really well. We had a wicked response. People really got behind it, and they, more importantly, had a great time. You know, they loved the performance. They were like, when's the next one? So I was in Australia over Christmas and New Year, gone to see my brother, came back, and we had a performance set up at the end of January, and that was at the London A Cappella Festival. And that was just amazing because we had a much bigger crowd. Again, you know, it was a prestigious event for vocals. It was really, really good. It went down really well again.
And I guess you get people in it from all walks of life. It's not just like the same type of person all the time.
No.
It's affected by this.
Exactly. I mean, it affects all ages, people that are doing literally anything. Yeah. And that's what I think is really nice about bringing people together, because they all have a common thing that they've all dealing with or have dealt with. It's nice to bring them together and do something creative with this, and that can be a source of helping them. You know,
have you got any advice for either people who want to beatbox or people who have a stammer, or just anyone generally in the industry, in the music industry?
I would say if you're a beatboxer already, experiment and explore to find your own sound. It's so, so important. Actually, in School of Beatbox, the online course, I've done a section that's just called Flow, where there's various exercises that are just geared towards helping you find your own sound. So there's loads of sounds out there, and there's lots of beatboxers that you'll hear that will definitely inspire you. And you'll be like, wow, how do they do that? Especially now with music styles changing, electronic sounds in all mainstream music being such a prominent feature, you can hear that translated through beatboxers' repertoires now as well, which is amazing to hear. It's actually, you know, we've always had the same anatomy, but to suddenly find these new sounds that we could do before, but now we're only doing them because we've got like these wobbling bass lines and stuff in music, so now we translate it. It's amazing. But I would always say, just keep experimenting, keep pushing your boundaries, keep pushing the walls. If you can do a sound, mess around with it, the shape of your mouth, how much breath you're using, you'll find that you can twist and shape the sound in so many ways, and you'll find some magical stuff.
Great.
Yeah, I get lost in it.
Do you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you one of those people that, like, you'll be like, oh, I've heard this sound, like, around, and you can copy it?
I mean, sometimes, yeah. Car journeys a lot of the time, you know, if I'm in a, you know, driving anywhere, that would be the time where I'll spend a lot of my time practicing. So all the rest of the time I'm working. That's the only time that I can kind of, you know, chill a bit, I guess. There's a guy called Razel, who's probably the most famous beatboxer. And he has got, like, kind of a signature sound. And there was one, I always wanted to do it, and I was always trying to figure out how it's done. One time, literally, I was just driving. I didn't even think about it. It was weird. I just kind of thought, that's the sound, and I'm just going to try it. And it just came out, and it's this sound. It's like a hydraulic kind of a drill. It's kind of robotic kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I just did it, and I was like, oh, there it is.
Well, it sounds like you're very instinctual with it, though, especially if you did it as a kid.
Absolutely, yeah. It is a, it's definitely a flow. I think this connects with most beatboxers, I would say. Beatboxing is improvisation, you know, because you're translating stuff that comes to you that you feel inspired by. You can translate it instantly, and that's the magic of beatboxing. It's like you don't have to be set up in any particular way. Don't need any other instrument and stuff. You can just practice it wherever you are, and you can just give it a go.
I mean, it's so different from singing, because I guess, well, it depends if you're doing, like, improv stuff, but generally singing has such a structure. I mean, you get to make the song, you get to make the backing a lot of the time that people sing on. So
when you use loops and stuff like that, for sure.
But a lot of the time singing, depending on what style you're singing in, you're restricted to what that is, like the actual song. I guess you're never really restricted, are you?
No. Unless you work something specific out for a particular performance, and that's the thing. So when I first moved to London, when I was just before I was 18, I got into a lot of jam sessions. That was one of the real big thing for me. So did loads and loads of jam sessions. Pretty much every weekend I'd just be spending hours just improvising, basically. And actually working with other musicians, it means that you're not completely on your own. You're working towards a common goal, right? You're trying to make some wicked tunes, basically. So having that kind of setup meant that you are fixed a bit more, because you're working to whatever bass line's going on, or keys part, saxophone, whatever it is, and other vocals and stuff, and you're working with it. There's still always freedom. Yeah. I mean, with singing as well, obviously, you've got the song, but then the way you deliver it is all your, you know, that's where you're kind of expressed, right?
Of course, absolutely. And you want to have your own unique way of doing that, for
totally.
Sure.
Totally, yeah.
But then if you're singing with a band, you can't completely go off and be like, I'm going to sing something.
Structurally and stuff,
structurally
for sure.
And stuff, you have to keep to a certain thing, and,
and
dependent on style. So if you were doing, like, musical theatre, for example, there's, like, a specific in something like that, which is less music industry based, where you're telling a story and it has to be fairly similar each night.
Sure.
That is a thing that often you have to keep the same. But if you're doing jazz, you can do what the hell you like.
So I would say it's quite similar, actually. If you're working with a band and you've got, like, certain tunes, then your beatbox can, because, you know, they're expecting, if you, that's what you've practiced, of course, that's the thing. But generally, yeah, it's an open book.
Good job.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.